All right, there's two great panels speaking here at the Mount Errigal, and we're going to give you a sample of what they've got to say. They'll be joining us too, really looking forward to that. But also very pleased to welcome Jerusha. Is that correct, Jerusha?
Yep,
beautiful perfect. Name, yeah. Jerusha, owner
Thank
of Jerusha Marley, open artist studio and shop. And you're showcasing here today?
I am, yes.
Tell me about your business, Jerusha.
So I have a shop in Donegal Town. It's in Millcourt Mews. And I'm a designer, an artist. I hand draw artworks, which are then translated onto luxury silks, canvas prints, cushions, all things homewares and textiles.
It sounds wonderful, but how do you find that there is a market for that? I mean, it seems obvious, right? But you have to sort of put a lot of time and your skills and everything into it. So how did you learn that there was a market for it, there was a business here?
I started out, you know, on setting up a website. So the website was running for quite a number of years before I then moved into having a physical shop. So I think it's really social media is huge in supporting that.
And you ship all over the world, don't you?
I do, yeah. So I find the shop's really helping now because, you know, Donegal is an amazing tourist town, tourist destination. So there's a lot of Americans who are coming into the shop, and then they'll go back home and they'll take the website with them, and then I'll continue to ship to them.
And do you have an ethos, do you, or your customer base? Is there a spiritual element to your work?
Yeah, absolutely. So the drawings are very soulful and they tell a lot of stories. So I think they resonate quite deeply with people, for sure, yeah.
So does that mean you kind of get a sense of who your customers are, even if you don't get to interact with them? Because if they get you, I presume you might be able to get them.
Every business has their specific kind of, I suppose, customer base that we're striving to bring to our business. But I also find that it resonates with everyone. You know, there's always the most surprising customers sometimes pick up pieces, yeah.
And you do all the pieces yourself, or is there a team?
No, I mean, it takes a team to run a business.
Of course, yeah.
But all the drawings are done by me, yeah.
So is that the way you always want it to be? In other words, you know, if you really wanted to scale it up, your time is not infinite either, right? So, but would you always want it to be you because that's what the business is, or do you ever think about that?
I think expansion is always on the cards for sure. In how that can happen is still to come, I suppose. But it's always going to be like, you know, my drawings and the, you know, that's sort of, that personal touch is going
to be so
important to the business, yeah.
And have you worked with local enterprise office much?
I started my business with the enterprise board, and I was just last year, or the year before last, I was at the Women's Enterprise event in Loch Ness Castle, and it was actually at that networking event that I met somebody who then in turn helped me find my shop itself.
Wow, that's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah, so networking is so powerful.
And I'm so delighted you gave an example of what networking is, because I think sometimes people outside of the business world, they hear networking and they go, well, what exactly? But you've explained it.
Yeah.
And I think the Millcourt Mews, I like, that's a nice space actually,
it's
isn't it?
It's stunning. It's a listed building right in the heart of Donegal Town. And it's just so many beautiful shops in there. And
they've built a lovely big car park for you as well.
Yep, just for us. Yeah.
Okay, brilliant. Well, continued success. If people want to find out more about the work that you do, Jerusha, what's your preferred social media?
So I'm on Instagram and Facebook. It's Jerusha Marley. And my website is also www.jerushamarley.com.
Brilliant. Lovely story. Continued success.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for helping us sort of understand the importance of networking and engaging with the local enterprise office. Lovely speaking to you.
Thank you.
Okay, so check out Jerusha Marley on Facebook and Instagram for more. Right, we've a really great panel joining us for a chat after these messages. And welcome back to the 9 till Noon show. Now I'm joined by two guests here. They are Caroline Faulkner and Edward McDade of Football Special. Caroline has enjoyed a distinguished and multifaceted 35-year career in Fortune 50 companies globally. Both of you, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Caroline, do you get much pleasure? I'm sure you do from events like this, right? Because you've been there, done that. So you're bringing a wealth of knowledge and experience to the table. But also, do you like to engage with other people at different stages of their business development?
It's actually one of my favourite parts of it, Greg, is actually walking around today and looking at all of the local businesses and their stalls and all of their products, etc. And it's wonderful to see these businesses at different stages. Some at startups, some are trying to grow their business, some are trying to scale internationally. So I really love engaging with businesses. And, you know, no matter what size the business is, a lot of the problems are the same and maybe just have to be tackled in different ways. So, yes, I very much enjoy engaging with all the people here.
Given the success that you've had, Caroline, you must often be asked, you know, what's your one tip in business? You must have an answer for that at this stage.
Well, I'll tell you where my passion really lies, and I do think it is the secret sauce, and that is actually in the people. Mm. And I think it's really about, first of all, getting the right people within your business, but also empowering them and giving them the right level of training and runway to be able to do their best work for you. So human potential is a huge passion of mine. So I do think that's where the real difference maker are for businesses.
A lot of the businesses that work with Leo are, you know, from 1 to 50, okay? Mm-hmm. And many of them might be content where they are, but they want to grow. In this day and age, with the advancements we're seeing in terms of AI and the different ways in which you can reach people, is it a time of greater opportunity or greater challenge in sort of finding your space in the business world?
I think it's a greater opportunity. I think AI can be off-putting to people, but it is a tool that can be very effective, and I do think it has to be embraced alongside both your product and service offerings and indeed your staff and how you really engage with customers. But AI, I would see, as a tool to be embraced, but not to replace indeed how business operates with human beings.
There's great demands on your time to speak at events like this. Why do you accept the invitation to this one?
Well, because I'm born and bred in Donegal. I think today's theme is Made in Donegal, and it's very important to me to be able to give back in any which way I can, particularly within the county in which I was born and raised, and spent a lot of time in Letterkenny during the 16 years during the Primerica days. And so it's just wonderful to be back amongst the local enterprise and really meeting people in person and having good, strong dialogue about things for the future.
We're speaking during, International Women in Sports Week, and also tomorrow, International Women's Day. As a woman that's operated in what many would have seen traditionally as a male-heavy sort of space, you know, what are your reflections on the journey over the 35 years and maybe where we're at now?
Yeah, I found, you know, honestly, I picked a very male-orientated career. And when I started my career, I was in computer science. And so there was very, very few women in that field. And, you know, it was sort of difficult sometimes to have your voice heard. And I think really what I think it's about is putting your game on the field. It's really about learning and getting good at your craft, building your experience, and then being able to have a multiplier effect with that. And I think that has been really big part of my journey. Also, I think like any job, regardless of gender, it just takes resilience, mm-hmm. and it takes the ability to fail, skin your knees and get back up. And I think that's the important thing, not to be put off when things go wrong, as they invariably will do.
Yeah, sitting beside Caroline is Edward McDade, football special. You know, the one company that has been in the family for a very long time. I don't know how many recessions you've been through, how many highs and lows, Brexit, not Brexit, this, that and the other. You know, there's not an awful lot you could be taught about keeping a business successful, I would say, Edward.
Oh, no, there's a lot to learn about business. No. It keeps surprising me every day of the week. I'm listening even to the like of Caroline and the sort of career, and she mentions AI, you know. AI was something I thought, you know, the agricultural community did. I'm not quite familiar with all of the rest of it. So, no, you got to, a bit like Caroline said about the people, if you have the right people with you, I think, and that's so important. You know, that will drive you forward. I think that's what keeps the succession bit going. And, you know, that's, to me, that's the most important part of it.
We never really know where life is going to take us, do we? I mean, you began your career as an investment banker based in Dublin, right? So the bright lights of the city, sky's the limit wherever you could end up. Your father very sadly passed away. Was it a big decision to return back home to steer the ship?
Yeah, well, I didn't start my career in investment banking. I started my career
these
washing...
These notes are going in the bin.
I start my career washing bottles by hand.
Well, I didn't count that. That's not work. That was for family.
My playground was the factory. Yeah. I've been working since the age of about 4 or 5.
I can imagine,
That kind of thing. So it's very much ingrained in you. But, yeah, it was a big decision, yeah. And, I mean, that's again, it's something, you know, my late father, God rest him, great man, obviously kept the business going very well and all that kind of thing. But succession planning was not really his strength. And while obviously I did inherit the business, until his will was read, I didn't really know if I had. You know, I mean, that's just the way matters work out. So you got to make sure if you want the generations to inherit whatever it is you've built, you want to make sure that they know that that's going to happen to them, you know? So,
what would you say a word that would describe your business? Because it's been around for so long and has seen so many changes. I'm sure it's been written off at times. I'm not sure of that, but, you know, any business over...
I am sure.
Okay, well, I didn't want to be presumptuous, but is it resilience? Is it drive?
Resilience, resilience? You know, business is not... It's not a 100-meter dash. It's, you know, it is a marathon. It is a marathon. And that's why you need people with you along the way. That's why you need good people. And you also need to know exactly what your business is about, where it's going. You know, I always go back to there's an old story about, you know, Greece. We often think, you know, ancient Greece has nothing to teach us. But, if you go any day and manage to get in a strange country, get into a car, you're going to plug in the GPS, you know, and you're using Pythagoras' theorem, you know, of triangulation to get there. And one of the things from the old Greek temples was, you know thyself. So you really need to know what it is your business is about, and you've got to really make sure that you know what you're doing and why you're doing it. And the next generation then have to interpret that differently. And they will interpret it differently, as they have to, because it's very much a digital world as well nowadays.
I beg your pardon, Edward. It is indeed. And Caroline, you know, we heard from Edward about business resilience. And I think a big thing we need to ensure, I think, as we educate the next generation of business people or workers, is actually individual resilience. Because I speak to a lot of people in business, and they do be a little bit concerned about how prepared our youth are for the cut and thrust of what can be, you know, really tough stuff.
It really is. And I honestly think when you mentioned AI, the thing that I'm very passionate about now and sort of a big focus of my next stage in my career is unlocking that human potential. And within that, it's all of that sort of situation is building resilience, allowing people to really understand how they can actually really tap into their most inane qualities and not to be put off by all of the moving parts and all of the environmental issues that are outside of them, and to truly allow them to use their capabilities and their strengths to their best potential. So yes, resilience is a huge component of that.
We are also joined by Willie McCarter, who's going to be part of the three-person panel. Willie is former Managing Director of Fruit of the Loom and former Chair of the International Fund for Ireland. Willie, thank you so much for your time.
Good morning. Nice to be with you.
It's good to be with you. I mean, obviously, you played a pivotal role in the success of Fruit of the Loom in Ireland, and lots of lessons to be to sort of pass on, I suppose, to people now in the world of businesses. What works? What strategies work? What issues one has to overcome?
Yes, when I think about it, there quite a few lessons. One of them is that people in this part of the world, I think Caroline was using the word resilience there. People are very resilient and able to step up to the plate. We had a family company of about 450 people in the early 80s. Times were very tough indeed, rapid cost inflation, not the same development on prices, so we're squeezed very badly. And we developed a strategy, which was reach out to the United States to find a joint venture partner. And we developed a strategy to do that, where my middle brother uprooted himself for a year to go to North Carolina, where he had already been when he worked for DuPont. And that strategy worked because we reckoned that because we're so near Northern Ireland, people would be very reluctant to come to this area. But by reaching out, by him putting down roots in North Carolina, we got lucky. And Fruit of the Loom decided that, as they called it in their own Kentucky fashion, people had a good work ethic in this part of the world. And so it turned out that we built a business of 3,000 people, six plants in Donegal, two in Derry, and only with the yarn mill in Derry did we have any resident Americans, and only that for a year. So my message is, people in this part of the world, if they think carefully about things and are determined to do it, they can do it.
Brilliant. And as a business consultant now, everyone's different, all businesses are different, but there's a commonality too, right? You probably go in and spot something that you see regularly. Is there something that springs to mind, if I put it to you like that? Like that, what is the most common space a business needs to work on?
Sorry, could you repeat that?
Yeah, I'm just sort of, as a business consultant, when you go in and consult with people, what area do they generally need most help with?
I find that quite difficult to answer.
That's
really.
Okay. I'm not sure if that means it's a good or a bad question, so we draw a line under it. actually, as it turns out, we must move on. Willie, thank you so very much indeed. Willie McCarter is going to be joining Edward McDade and Carol Faulkner, and it's going to be a fantastic panel with Kira asking the questions. That's coming up between 12 and 3. I would love to be able to stick around for that. But Willie, thank you so much for joining us. It's been
welcome.
A pleasure. And also Caroline, thank you very much. And also Edward McDade. You are tuned to the Nigel Loon Show here in Highland Radio. We are broadcasting live from the Mount Errigal Hotel. There's a second panel speaker between 12 and 3 here, and it contains quite literally sporting legends here from County Donegal. And I'm looking forward to chatting to them after we take a break. Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. So, as we mentioned, there's two panels speaking today. We just heard from the business panel, and there's an amazing sporting panel as well. Joe Barr, a very good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning.
It's great
Thank
to have you,
for
you
having
with
me.
Us. Patsy McGonigal, also with us. How are you, Patsy?
Morning, Greg.
And Jim McGuinness, the Donegal manager. Jim, thanks so much indeed.
Morning,
great to
Greg.
Chat to you. Joe. We've been talking about it a little earlier on. It's obvious, really, when you think about it. The work ethic, the commitment that you require to be as successful and accomplished in a sport. These are transferable skills to business, clearly.
Absolutely. I think that one of the things that sometimes gets misunderstood, that because when someone looks at the sport that I'm involved in, they automatically think it's a solo sport.
Yes.
And that couldn't be further from the truth. Like we have quite a robust team that all contribute to the whole thing. So, it's very, very much like business and life, where, you know, all of the team, all of the time, we always say the first thing that they ask yourself is what I'm doing right now moving the bike forward? And if it's not, I need to stop. And that's really the ethic that we work from.
But you have to be incredibly motivated as an individual to achieve what you have achieved over the years. What is the trait that you have, do you think, that's enabled you to do that? Is it stubbornness? Commitment?
I think that over the years it has evolved. You know, I'm very, very fortunate to have what I call two careers. My first career in professional mainstream racing like ended and whatever. But when I got into endurance racing or ultra distance racing, it was at that point that I realized that I had so many skill sets that I didn't understand or know about until that point. And I felt that it was a great opportunity for me to try and explore each one of those pillars to see exactly where the limit was. So again, you know, you're told in normal life, like, you know, age and all these other things are all, you know, things that are hurdles. Like, so we've try to figure out how we can overcome all of those hurdles.
And also your own mental discipline, how important has that been to your success to be able to stay in the space that you need to be in to achieve what you've achieved?
It's very, very important. To be honest with you, the physical aspect of it is the smaller part of the big picture. Mm. And I was unfortunate but fortunate a health situation with my son actually introduced me to the understanding of how to actually work with my mind and how to overcome the hurdles that I was creating more than the hurdles that were actually there. And that was a great insight, and I spent 3 years working intensively on that, and all I did then was I took that from, let's call it, a hospital environment, and I took that and I applied it to sport.
In so much of your life, you've been in control, and you're in control, and you have to be in control. Was that situation more difficult because it was outside of your control, and there was only certain elements, maybe, that you could influence?
Absolutely, and we work sort of from the 2% theory. So I try very hard to move the small things every day forward, as opposed to try to make big things happen. So, and I'm also in it for the long haul. I'm not expecting things to shift in a week. I'm looking for them to shift over time. And I also do trial and error. I will actually apply a system. I'll take it out and I'll try it. And if it works, it does. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. And I come back and I go back to the drawing board and I start again. But it's all about small shifts a lot. And if you look at something like, and I'll give you the example of the Race Across America, which is the pinnacle of really the type of sport that I'm doing, where you're asked to perform for 12 days nonstop. The mental challenges that come in that period of time change drastically. And one of the biggest impacts to that is how sleep deprivation impacts your mind.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is you get introduced to this world of understanding how your mind actually functions and how you can have a negotiation with it, as opposed to allowing it to determine the outcome. So there's, it's been an incredible journey, and truthfully, every day that I go out, and hopefully there'll be another year of that ahead, there isn't one day that I don't learn something new about it all.
Amazing, and these are transferable skills into the world of the business. Clearly, Patsy McGonigal, I mean, it's hard to quantify what you've achieved in that. You were right there at the beginning as seeing something that could be made, working with others to make it, engaging with the people, and then creating these amazing, amazing athletes. I mean, you've been there from the inception to now. It's really quite remarkable. And if not mistaken, our own Mark English finished second in the 800 metres heats in Holland at the European Indoor Championship. Your fingerprints all over that achievement as well. So well done to Mark. But it's been a remarkable journey for you.
Yes, indeed it was, and it's like everything else.
And if you could give me a Mark English soundbite for Oisin Kelly, I think he'd be very appreciative as well.
No, Mark gave me nervous moments this morning, in fairness, but he got there in the end up. But just to say that, what was I going to say now? I got an opportunity, obviously, to get involved in athletics at boarding school, and then just basically took the opportunity and ran with it all my life and brought it back home, as they say, and lucky enough to be in an environment, both on education and different places in life, to learn, and then brought it back to my own community. Obviously, like I had to start with kids, and then it's a long, long journey from starting with children, right, to get people to the Olympic Games. And I have been lucky in the last couple of Olympic Games that I've had athletes there. You know, that's encouraging to see that pathway
it's
develop.
But it's a remarkable achievement to because if in the absence of what you developed, we wouldn't be having these moments and these people wouldn't be reaching the pinnacle of what they're doing. It's unbelievable. Was it hard to convince people of what was possible?
Well, that's a long story. You know, I mean, basically, you've got to get the people involved, and it's as basic as getting people involved. Get into the schools, get numbers. Out of the numbers, you're going to get a percentage, whatever it may be, and then work on a percentage that stays with you and has got the attitude and takes responsibility. And look, it's like a jigsaw. So many things have got to be right, and you work it through. And it's really, you know, there's plans, surely, and there's great words and there's great psychology, and you could throw it all out there, but the idea is you just got to build on it day on day, and it is a daily exercise. So if you've got a good athlete, you've got to build on that athlete every single day. And you know, they talk now about, you know, all sports about the commitment to training, but you know, our 16, 17 year olds are actually taking training on board, taking attitude to training on board nearly 7 days a week, you know. Mm-hmm. And I try to explain sometimes when I go to schools, you know, about being into things like training camps and about the daily life of an athlete on a training camp. And to a normal person, it sounds so boring because you're up, you get the breakfast, you train, you come back, get something to eat, you sleep, you go back out and you train again, and then you sit around and you chat for a while, and these are all adults, and that happens for weeks and weeks, and everybody is happy, everybody is on top of the world, the attitude is good. And when you talk about that background of that world, they'll think, Lord, that sounds terribly boring, but there's nobody boring there. So it's all an attitude of mind, and, you know, coming through from what Joe's saying, you know, the mental approach, the mental attitude, how you take it on board, that's it all. But it's a build, going back to what you're saying, Greg, it's all about building on it day by day by day. Mm-hmm. And it's getting supports in there, you know. And we're here for a business conference, and, you know, made in Donegal. And quite honestly, you know, the parallel, and I've said this so many years ago, the parallel between business and sport is a complete parallel. Because everything that you do and leading a team or being in charge of a team, whether it's kids at Finn Valley or whether it's Irish Olympic team or whether it's World Championships or a business, whether it's a small business or a large business, it's the relativity is very much the same. Because at the end of the day, it's all about people. It's about the people you have with you. If you haven't got the right people with you, then you've got extra responsibilities, you've got extra pressures. So it's all about building a team. And that's business. And it's all about business. And it's all about your reaction with the people. It's all about your reaction with the community. It's all about your reaction with all of those things. So that's business. You know, that's business. That's sport. And that's our operating opportunity today in this environment today that we're in today. It's business and a sport, and that's the link. A serious, serious link.
Yeah, it's amazing, and it's also inspirational. I'm sitting here feeling inspired even just listening, and we haven't even got to Jim McGuinness yet. Jim, good morning to you. It's great to It's great to have you back as the boss of Donegal as well. Of course, we're enjoying the journey week in and week out. It seems. I think you have a reputation of being a big thinker, if you know what I mean, like in terms of the sports psychology and working with people and developing the potential of each individual. Is that part of who you are? Is that how you see yourself?
Well, thanks for having us, and obviously the local enterprise board as well for having us. It's great to be here this morning, and with such guests from my left here as well, and getting their insights. It's always lovely to rub shoulders and talk to people that are in the same space, so it's great to be here. I don't know about a big thinker, but I do think a lot, a hell of a lot. Probably every waking hour is on football in some shape or form. And again, to Patsy's comment, that might be boring for a lot of people, but certainly not for myself. Very fortunate to be in, I suppose, in a situation where sport has been such a big part of my life. That's what I wanted it to be. And to experience that now with Donegal again is amazing. The professional aspects that I also experienced were great, and the training camps that Patsy's talking about, you know, where, you know, really you're in a bubble. You're in a bubble from reality in many respects, from the outside world, from work. You're there, you know, you're talking strategy, you're trying to understand people, develop people, grow them, develop a game plan, grow the game plan. And I suppose following on from Patsy's comments as well about the business aspect of it, that is very much it. You know, you go in, a CEO will go in with a vision, but a vision's one thing, bringing that to life is another thing, and the people that are in the organisation are going to make that happen. And if they don't believe in the leader or the leader, the CEO, it's not going to happen. And I think that's a very important part of it.
Is it easy for you to identify, right, and this is no criticism of anyone that went before you, but you're working with a set of players, at least for a certain time, that were very similar to a set of players that weren't enjoying success as they went on to under you in a very short space of time. What can you change in that short space of time to get so much out of to get what appears to be so much more out of a group of players?
Well, I think the first thing is to understand them. I think that's the first thing, and I think this group is very different to the last group in many respects because of the environment that they've grown up in. Technology is a huge part of their life, and they're very cerebral. They need to understand things. They need to have the data. When I qualified in psychology and I finished in John Moores, the following day I started work in Limavady, lecturing in psychology and coaching. And that was a fantastic experience in terms of the theoretical part, but I also started working with teams. And within that first sort of 18 months to 2 years, I was actually working with 23 teams. So I was here a night and there a night and here a night, and a lot of them Gaelic teams, a lot of them not, a lot of some athletes. But it was really interesting because I very quickly, and I spent my whole life in dressing rooms, but I very quickly got to understand, as soon as I almost went in the door, who was who in the room. And I think that's very, very important to understand that. You'll see the people, you know, the one-third rule that I call it, the one-third that are highly, highly motivated. They're staring you in the eyes, whether you're looking at them or not. They're picking up every single detail. The people that are like, who's this guy? Is this guy going to help me or benefit me? You know, I could be doing other things. I want to be outside kicking points, you know. And the middle group for me is the most important group because they're the people that can actually influence the dynamic of the overall organization. And if you can move that middle group to the higher level group who are self-sufficient anyway, normally the bottom group follow that, and then all of a sudden you move from average into a higher level, and then you're in a position then where you can start pushing buttons to move further and further. And that's
almost like a game of chess as well, in that, say, for instance, you know, Michael Murphy coming back into the team, and I'm not going to dig into the ins and outs of that, Oisin and the likes can do it, right? But, you know, a lot of the conversations, where will he play, how influential he is catching that. But as being the thinker that you are, I presume when you try and persuade him back in, there's many aspects to his presence that you're looking at. Maybe there's just a piece missing in the top left corner that's got nothing to do with where he's going to play, that you think, right, maybe that's just the 0.025% that could be the difference deep into the championship.
Yeah, well, I think with Michael, if we're speaking about Michael, with Michael, obviously what he can do as a football player, you know, has probably been unparalleled in Donegal. But the most important thing with Michael is what he adds to the culture and what he adds to the value of the group, how he carries himself, how he trains, how focused he is. I haven't really experienced anybody with a more laser-like focus. How he eats, how he rests, how he recovers, how he passes on information, how he takes information. And all of the younger players are looking at that, they're watching at that, they're understanding that, they're understanding this is the way this guy operates and works. And I think that is a huge bonus to the group before we even get into the fact that he can make such a difference on the pitch, you know. Okay. And that's what you want. You want those people with the most influence being your most important people, because it can be the other way sometimes as well. You know, your best player sometimes is not the best fit for the culture, and that can be a real challenge for a manager.
A person that really impressed me as an observer was Patrick McBurty, who defended that team to the hilt long before you came back, and stood up to some interviewers on the pitch for that team. And then now to be to still be there and to be so influential as a person, I think he must be amazing.
No, definitely. And Paddy,
because it would have been easy to put your hands up, but he wasn't having it, you know, back under, you know, when Donegal was at low ebb.
No, when Donegal were at low ebb, that's when Patrick basically came knocking, you know, and spent a couple hours down in the house with myself to try and convince me to go back. That was the start of the process, and was pretty relentless in his, you know, in his activities after that, you know, between phone calls and calling to the house and everything else. So obviously he understood that, having been there before and all the experiences and success that he had, he understood that this was a moment. And he was going to try and, you know, find the best way out of that difficult situation. And Patrick was very, very influential in that period, for sure.
Really impressive guy, as I don't know him, just as an observer. Do we want to finish in the top two of the league? Do we try and avoid that? I'm not sure the Irish news can ask you that question. I can, because I don't know anything about sport, right? Do we want to finish in the top two?
Are you sure
league?
Now? Are you sure about that? No.
I don't even know if it's a good question.
No, listen, we've worked really hard, and we've worked really hard off the pitch as well. We were in a position where we could get away for a training camp, probably out of the blocks. when we were allowed to go, and that kind of set us up for the start of the league, and we got points on the board, and that's what we wanted to do, because obviously there's so much change. Change is still happening. There's talk about change today as well, again, in terms of the rules, so we're all still learning. So it was very important for us to try and get everybody together as quickly as possible to get points on the board. We've done that, so we've earned the right now to look at everything and do what's right for ourselves. What I will say is, regardless what we do in the next two games, we'll be going out to win those games. We'll be going out to bring everything we have to those games. We have players that have played a lot. We have players that need to play. Oran McFadden-Ferry, for example, coming back in, Niall O'Donnell coming back in. There's a lot of players like that fit that category. And what we want to do is use the next two games to keep pushing all of our players forward, but also to bring as many players as possible to the boil for the championship game. That was our start point before we kicked the ball at all in the league, and that won't change. And if we win those games in the process, then we're in the league final, that's so be it. And if we don't, we'll be focused on Derry in 5 weeks.
Exactly, because we're going to need depth, aren't we, and preparedness physically and mentally deep into the championship. Fingers crossed.
Well, I think the one thing maybe from last year that, the learning was, that we needed a bit more depth and,
A wee bit tired against Galway, maybe it felt, is that right?
Well, we had fellas now, Owen McGettigan, Owen McFadden-Ferry, Owen McHugh, Michael Murphy, a lot of players like that have come back in this year that had previously played championship football.
Yeah.
It's one thing trying to develop younger players, but, there's nothing that beats the fella that's been there and done that. And so we have that now with the fellas that have come back in, and we're looking to continue to develop the players that we have.
I mean, what three, legend, we can use the word here, it's perfectly fine, and we've spoke to business legends. I mean, they've got some amazing people here. I would like Joe Barr, Patsy McGonagall, Jim McGuinness to get around a table somewhere and me just sit listening, because, the insights and what you've achieved and how you can motivate people, we're so blessed. It really is astonishing that the amount of what we produce out of this county. Jim, thank you so much. Thanks for all the great Sundays and Saturdays. And Patsy, thank you for everything. And I don't think we've spoken before, Joe. It's been lovely to speak to you. And I don't know why you want to cycle America, but I trust you know what to do. So that's fine. It just takes a remarkable type of person. Thank you very much indeed. Okay, we'll be back with more. As you would know, all this week, in association with the Donegal Sports Partnership, as part of Women in Sport Week 2025, we're looking at different roles women play in sport. And this morning, we talked to Teresa Doonan, who's manager coach with Convoy Arsenal and is also on the Female Leadership Programme. Ladies soccer, it's gone through quite an evolution over, it seems, a short time, but it hasn't been, because people have been battering away in the background for years, not least the likes of yourself, Teresa.
It has indeed, Greg. First of all, thank you very much for having me on. I'm with Convoy Arsenal, and we really only got up and going 2023 in January, where I moved from another club because we had moved to the area, and I also have three daughters playing football there in the local school and so on. So now we have girls from age under 8 right the way up to under 16.
Which is fantastic.
It's absolutely fantastic.
You move 16? Back here with your daughters, and if there's nowhere to play, you just create a team. It's that simple.
Well, it didn't really work. It didn't really work like that. When we moved back, we moved to Letterkenny.
Yeah.
I was originally from Raphoe, so the first choice was going to be Raphoe Football Club. We moved then to Convoy, and that's where we're staying. We're not moving again. And the girls just started the school there, and that's the way it happened. Yeah. There
fantastic. Wasn't, yeah. And you started coaching. You were involved with Maynooth, but did you start coaching, or is it the qualifications that you sort of acquired when you moved back up home?
No, well, when we were living in Maynooth, Amy, my oldest girl now, she was only 5 at the time. She showed a great interest in football from that very early age. Once we moved then to Donegal, I had started actually getting really involved in it through Donegal Sports Partnership. Maggie here really encouraged me and was a great support network to me. I started doing my FAI coaching, my PDP 1s, 2s, 3s and so on, doing lots of different things involved in football. Even the summer there through the FAI, I did disability in sport, vision awareness in sport, because my role as a job, I'm a special needs assistant and now currently working with children with severe intellectual disabilities. So doing mixing all that in with the football, I did a lot of work with Trevor Scanlon and the FAI, and himself, Shane Barr and Brian Dorian are really pushing the female game, coaching females and so on. And it's good having a female coach involved in clubs, because although the tactics are very important, there's other things to be included as well, as, you know, how their menstrual cycle and so on affects the ability in sport, and how to prevent injuries and so on. And it's through doing courses, workshops. Even 2 years ago, I did a women's conference, and Vera Powell and Eileen Gleeson spoke to me from the stage when I was just getting Convy Arsenal Girls football up and running, and gave lots of very important advice and information to help me along my way. Yeah,
for sure. And wherever you've gone, you've always found yourself involved in football, really. That's just the way it is, such as your passion for it. In creating something and attracting young girls into it, does it help when the national team, for an example, is being successful, or when the European Championships are on, or if a World Cup is on, you know, when it's when there is that exposure, can you sort of track an increase in interest even at a local level?
It does. Also, even like locally, from club level now to the Donegal Women's League, you know, that can inspire girls,
course,
and going
yeah.
on from there to like Finn Harps and the National League, there is definitely a player progression, which probably a number of years ago there wasn't. That builds inspiration for the girls to have role models and to be seeing where they could actually end up, you know, sticking at the football. But it's more for me as well, the coaching and the tactics and all that. Like, we have, I have a great man works alongside me, Johnny Doherty, shout out, who has been a real support system for me all along with this Convy Arsenal football. But for me, it's deeper than that. It's about building girls' confidence. You know, even the stronger players in the team, we currently have six girls that are now playing for Donegal Women's League at different levels, which there wasn't 2 years
ago. It's amazing.
Yeah, incredible.
From nothing to six. It's
but also, for me, it's more than that. It's about the less abled, or the, you know, the all abilities. So as there's always going
it's
to be something.
It's about an individual achieving the
their
most
own
that they
potential.
Can.
Their own potential.
Exactly.
Their own potential is so important.
Of the women involved in sport this week that I've spoken to that are mums, particularly mums of girls, their daughters have been an inspiration. Is that the same for you? I mean, obviously you've been inspired your whole life, right? But has that been a particular motivation to give opportunities or to, you know, you can be it if you can see it, sort of a thing?
A massive, massive part to play. Like, I'm involved in the Wee Youth Choir and so many different levels. It's about being a role model and showing the girls that if you want something, no matter how able you are at doing it, keep driving forward. Like, you're going to meet negativity along the way, and it's building resilience and showing them that even when you come across a problem or somebody, you know, tries to drag you down, one foot in front of the other, head up and drive on and be the best that you can be.
And the one thing I've noticed as a parent myself is you might not get the credit for it, but you do see your influence on your children, even if they don't want to say, you know, mom's cool, I want to do that. Your kids probably don't mind a boys. But you know what I mean? But then you do see the influence. So I presume they're going to seek out leadership roles themselves.
Well, hopefully,
they're going to seek out participation. Fingers crossed. But you're giving them every opportunity to do so. Maggie, how are you getting on? It's good to have you in front of the microphone.
Good morning, Greg. How are you
keeping? Maggie Farrelly's been keeping us in check all week and been lining up these guests. I think it's really important to have weeks like this where we recognise women's role in sport. But what we try and do in this programme is not do it once a week or 1 week in the year, you know, in terms of contribution from news, features, sport. It's to try and get us a representation of our community as we possibly can. But this has been a really enjoyable week, Maggie. I should say Maggie's education and training coordinator with the Donegal Sports Partnership. And you're lucky in that, I suppose, when you're trying to line guests up to speak, that you have such a wealth of powerful women in leadership roles right across sport in our county.
Yeah, absolutely, Greg. And I suppose it's just been out and about and you're meeting different people. Like, Trace is one of the ladies that's part of the female leadership programme that we started back in January. You know, we've got 10 ladies in that, all age groups. Again, we've got a girl who's only 16 years of age, she's still at school, to the girls who are a little bit older and a little bit more mature. And it's great to see that diversity within the group. And like that, then we have, I think, I volunteer them more so than anything else to be here, like Teresa. But they also have taken up the mantle now this week in terms of organising and running events for women in sport within their sport and sports sector. And in fairness to you, Greg, you've been mentioning those events all week. So you have. So the girls in Chloe and Kathleen, who's also part of the Female Leadership Programme, they started off with their ATU sessions. And that was massively successful on Wednesday afternoon with 28 different participants.
Oh, was there 28?
Yeah.
I didn't expect expect that many to take, with people. People are busy and stuff. So that's a fantastic turnout, I think, anyway.
Yeah, it was brilliant. And then Oisin was out at Ramolin Pier this morning with the Sunrise Dip.
Who? Our Oisin?
Yes.
What was he doing?
He was taking some interviews with some of the participants.
He didn't put on his bunches and others,
No. Unfortunately, he said that he was a wee bit cold, so he said he didn't do it.
You're naughty, Maggie, but go on anyway.
So Deirdre O'Toole, in fairness, I have a massive support within my work, so I have this wouldn't be possible without the support that I get from my colleagues.
Yeah, but Maggie, so I know you want to praise other people, but it's clear you're a huge driving force in all of this, and we've spoken to a lot of people all of this week, and I think you're the steady hand on the tiller as well, in terms of motivating people and dragging them into our studio and stuff as well. So I think you deserve a massive round of applause in what you're doing often behind the scenes as well, and giving people these opportunities, encouragements and platforms. So I think you deserve an awful lot of credit as well, Maggie.
Definitely. Thank you. Yeah, look, it doesn't happen overnight. You do have to put a wee bit of time and effort into planning these events and getting people on board and whatnot, and working with yourselves over the last number of days has been a great experience for me personally, and is one that I thoroughly enjoyed. But look, Women in Sport Week, it's a week that's dedicated to women in sport. It's driven by Sport Ireland. And it's events happen throughout the whole country. So every sports partnership within the country are delivering on this week.
Brilliant. So you heard some great interest in some of the events this week. Tomorrow, as part of Women in Sport Week, there's a yoga and dip. It's at Culdaff Beach at 7:30 in the morning. Yoga and dip. An open water dip's taking place tomorrow as well at Thropany Pool in Bundoran at 7:45. And I like this one. It's a bit of a curveball, I think. You can try fly fishing at Mongari Trout Fishery. Deal Community Anglers, they're running that. That's 12 noon tomorrow. And on Sunday, have you ever thought of riding a horse or horse riding? Well, at Drumdoit Stables, there's sessions at 11 a.m, 12 p.m, 13 p.m, which is 1 o'clock and 2 as well. So get on to the Donegal Sports Partnership, and you can book there through Eventbrite. It's been a pleasure, Maggie, having you in studio all week and introducing some amazing people, you know, from Audrey yesterday, a wonderful woman, to Teresa today. Okay. And it's great to hear of what people are doing and to recognise it as well. I should mention that Teresa was one of the first ever ladies on the first ever ladies Letterkenny Rovers ladies football team. That was last week, was it?
No, it was about 2 years ago. It was more like 30 years ago.
Anyway, you wouldn't know. Listen, thank you so very
thank
much.
Thank you, Greg.
Really appreciate it. And that's where we have to leave it on the show today. Thank you to everyone who took part in it. Thanks very much to our hosts here, local enterprise office, but also the Mount Argyle Hotel. Terry and his team have looked after us. Fantastic. Thanks to Caroline Orr, who researched and produced, to Shannon and to Joe, who's helped with the technical. And there's loads of Anna was here as well. I'm not quite sure what she did, but anyway, that's fine. And next time we'll get the oil on the door, because it's been squeaking all morning, which normally it's me squeaking. But anyway, that's where we have to leave it. We're back on Monday morning from the studio live from 9 a.m. Stay safe, though, and stay tuned.